Damo, you big sweet tooth.
Yes, MP, you chocoholic.
So naughty but nice. We're a hit at the Wellness Summit and I want more.
Well, how does 20 recipes in their free ebook Heavenly Healthy Desserts sound, MP?
Jeepers, Damo, I'm loving that.
Or you can hop on down to their brand new cafe, Selection Cafe in South Melbourne, and receive 10% off your favourite healthy desserts.
Woohoo! To do so, go to sonaughtybutnice.com/couch and fill in your details to receive your free ebook and discount voucher.
That's www.sonaughtybutnice.com/couch.
So naughty but nice, delicious nutrition.
WellnessCouch.com. Streaming wellness into your life.
Welcome. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of Karen's Couch. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now, before we get started, I wanted to preface today's show with a super, uber awesome invitation to everybody to join me at Mindset Mastery on the Gold Coast. It's a three-day live event where we tackle everything that goes on between your two ears and everything that happens as a result of it, including your relationships, your business, your job, your money, 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 honey. We're covering everything that goes on between your two ears. So if you want to find out a little bit more about it, go to allthews.karensmith.com/mindset-mastery. And I will give you more information on that. If you want to just email me, of course, just go right ahead. It's info@karensmith.com. Now, one of the main reasons why I wanted to preface today's show with that invitation to join me at Mindset Mastery is because today we are talking to one of my nearest and dearest friends, Jodi Nolan. Welcome to the show, my love.
Oh, thank you.
So Jodi and I have been uber awesome buddies for years now. And I met Jodi through Kim and Cindy. And there was always something about Jodi that just struck a chord with me personally because, and I'm just going to, I don't think I've even told you this, Jodes, but for me, I feel like I'm a kid inside. I feel like I'm about 7 or 8. And I look at all of these grown-up people around me and I think, wow, they're so grown up, they're so mature, and I'm so not like that. And and when I met Jodi, I was like, oh, she's a kindred spirit. She's just like me. She's like 8'2". You know, and it was almost like there was this wisdom and this wonderment all combined into one person.
And they say that birds of a feather, don't they?
They do. And I really felt like that. And over the years, I think, you know, so much has happened in both of our lives. It's brought us back together even more closely now, I feel. And it's almost like our permission to be playful is so much more, it's just so much more out there. And I don't know if that's you or if that's actually me. I think it's probably me. I don't think I gave myself much permission to let that playful side out too much because I thought it wasn't very grown up of me. But it's cool.
Well, in my world, being finance, you can't play.
Well, actually, it's quite true,
so
isn't it?
So it's refreshing.
Oh, my goodness. So we thought, Jodi and I were having a bit of a powwow about this. We thought that we would go down the rabbit hole of money and mindset and we would start to pick apart what goes on for people when it comes to their money. And Jodi is one of the most highly educated advisors and I guess financial spiritual leaders that I know that is able to take what's going on in our current economic environment and encapsulate it into a really simple, easy to understand dialogue that lets people then make really informed decisions about what they should and shouldn't do next. But also too, she's nobody's fool. So she's also going to be the person to point out, go here, go there, look at this, don't look at that. And the upside to Jodi, this is the part that I love the most, Jodi doesn't represent anybody but herself. And she's not selling anything. She's, you know, she doesn't stand to gain any financial benefit by selling somebody else's shares or stocks or property. She's not doing any of that. This is all her own personal journey, her own studies in finance and economics, and also her own desire to make a difference in the lives of people. Yes, people work with her, but on a consulting basis, not from a perspective of buy this share or buy that stock. So I think that's one of the reasons why I think having this conversation today will be super powerful, because, oh my goodness, Jodes, what the hell is happening with our stock market? What's happening with our money all around the world? Yeah. What's China doing? What's happening with the American dollar? What's happening with – it's all – to the layperson, it feels really quite confronting and scary.
Yeah. The first thing I probably would love to say is we don't need to be scared by it, that it'll play out however it needs to play out. But having said that, I think we are in for a very difficult 6 to 12 months at a minimum, and I'll go over that as we talk. But I like remaining at arm's length and not feeling like I'm product flogging or people – there's a hidden agenda. I think after 20-odd years in the industry, people can spot a salesperson a mile away, and financial planners generally get thrown into that same mix of real estate agents and used car salesmen these days. So what I love about what I do is I write for all the national financial publications in Australia, so I have to be across this, but I also am across this because I do a lot of financial coaching for small business and families, and their futures, to sit down and talk with them and then arm them with the education and the information that they didn't get at school or whatever it is, to take them from a place where they're feeling vulnerable and uncertain and frustrated and full of angst and relationships are falling apart and all sorts of things, to feeling empowered and confident and knowledgeable. And all of that not only relates to what you're talking about in relation to that rabbit hole thing that you say, but the mindset, getting into the mindset of money, it's a huge thing. So, yeah, we'll definitely touch on quite a few things, everything from perhaps giving some people some great tools today that by the end of this podcast they can go away and think differently about their own situation, but also get them to think and critically think, I think, is the key thing, critically think about their own environment and their own world right now.
Oh, that sounds like bliss. So, okay.
Yeah.
So
I think it is for me, but it's about money.
Most people find boring.
No, but you make it fun. Like, you make it actually an interesting topic rather than something that people want to glaze their eyes over about. So most people, let's dumb it down for a second to my level, which, you know, when it comes to money, I can use all the help I can get. For most people, you know, they're in a job or they might have their own small business, and their access to millions and millions of dollars, you know, is obviously limited. So for a lot of people, there's a very emotional connection to money, about how much they make, how much they don't make. They compare themselves to others. They look around at their lives. They see all the things that they don't have but want. And there's an emotional connection either to the money or the things that money can buy, which is then also quite challenging when it comes to having clarity, because I'm a big believer that when emotions are high, intelligence is low. So sometimes, you know, I even look at myself when I am in a panic state about money, then I'm not making good decisions left, right, or center. I'm not making good decisions at all. And I wonder too, because relationships can also be challenging when it comes to money. And I see lots of relationships that fall apart because of money. And generally opposites will attract. So one will be fine about it and the other one will be freaked out about it. And that is a really...
Yeah, definitely.
It's tough because that all affects the way that we relate to money, much less how we manage it. And I think that's still to come in the conversation. But let's start with our relationship to money. What do you see and what do you think?
Okay, so 20 years of interviewing clients, I guess, is the easiest thing to say, is historically and in my experience, you'll get a couple in and one will be a spendthrift and one won't. And one will be a planner and one won't. One will be a spender and one won't. And so that in itself creates dramas. But add to that, the whole perception of human mentality when it comes to anything, but particularly financials, anything to do with the banking and monetary sector, is a fear versus greed mentality. and they talk about it a lot in investing, but when it comes to people's personal finances, there's either a great deal of fear around something or a great deal of greed around something. When we start getting into the nitty-gritty of where are they at now and what's making them sleep or stay awake at night, you know, all of that comes to fear versus greed. And the best thing to realize is that it's actually just human condition, and it's, you're not, you know, particularly awful or you're not a failure if you're struggling in this area of your world right now, because the majority of the population don't give money as much credence potentially as they should.
So can I just ask?
But it is just a human condition.
Can I just ask you a question on that? So when you say fear versus greed, so is greed the opposite to fear when it comes to money? Is that what you've seen?
Yeah. Without doubt. Yeah. So when you're fearful, you're withdrawn, you're guarding, your body language will change dramatically when you're fearful. So everything from lacking confidence, so you can't make a decision on anything.
Yeah.
And that could just be as simple as, you know, in small business, for instance, they're fearful of making a decision in either direction on a particular project, and that's fear-driven. You might be fearful because you're worried about the repercussions. You might be fearful because you're worried about the certainty of your job, and then that'll affect decisions. It could even just be as simple as the fear of trusting people. So that's where a lot of the dramas come into play with financial planning. You know, people are worried about who to trust and where to turn.
For sure.
But yeah, a lot of financial. Yeah. Yeah, the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
But, there is a lot of fear around money. Fear of losing it is probably one of the biggest issues that I've ever come across.
Yeah.
You know, the little bit of equity that people have and the little bit of superannuation that people have, all that sort of stuff. People get a lot of fear around losing what they've worked so hard to achieve.
Mm.
Then those people that have already lost, for instance, whether it be bankruptcy or divorce, or have lost money in a stock market collapse, which I'll get to later, they've got awful amounts of fear around any financial decisions.
That's the fear side of it.
Then you've got, and it's just a human emotion. And obviously working with someone like yourself, you can move past all of that and get to a place where you're a lot more comfortable, and that comes with education but also the mindset, which is why I'll be at Gold Coast. But the greed side of things is a completely different play again, and that's keeping up with the Joneses or almost these days like keeping up with the Kardashians. Looking at because everybody sees what everybody else has got, and there might not be an innate jealousy or a huge desire for more, but in the day of social media, and everybody's comparing themselves on what everyone else is doing, and that greed, even in small amounts, can upset the apple cart in relation to decisions. The greed around wanting more material possessions, the greed around wanting to make it look like their life is full of all this amazing experiences, and it might not be money related. It could be being perceived. Managing perception, I think, is a massive thing people look at, and all of that comes down to the greed mentality. You know, I want to be bigger, better, faster, stronger, more exciting, more wealthy, more popular than the person next door.
Do you think we've always had that? It's just that now with social media, it's just more out there. But do you think, like in olden times?
No, I don't. I think that certain levels of the population did have it. You know, like if you are talking about old times or even 50 years ago, you know, the kings and queens and the people with the alpha type personalities who were naturally leaders, naturally driven, naturally focused, you know, they would rise above the masses and then they would become those people.
Mm.
But in today's age, where someone is not naturally an alpha type or not naturally, I'm not big on personality types, but someone who's not born leader, you know, they still want to be up there playing the top A game, but they perhaps don't know the level of
investment energy.
Investment, all of that that needs to go into it. Yeah, so, and that's not to say that they're not capable, because I've seen some of the best people, especially in relation to money, are those that are methodical, that are slowly wins the race.
They're
not, by all means, they're not the high flyers, they're not the spendthrifts, they're not out there with their glitzy cars and their shiny diamond rings. You know, they're the ones that slow and steady does it, and, you know, they plan and they map and they're diligent and they follow through, and all of that stuff results in what they want anyway. So, yeah, it's and if you are in a situation right now, if any of your listeners are listening in and they've got a lot of anxiety around money, they need to just look back and see whether they could classify it possibly as a fear or a greed thing. So am I fearful that my anxiety around money right now, or the fact that it makes me feel sick in the guts, is that because I'm fearful of losing something?
Yeah.
Is that fearful because I'm fearful of making or not making money? Or am I wanting things that are too unrealistic, and so I'm setting my expectations up here, and then because they're not being met each day, or I can't perceive them in the next 6 to 12 months, then I get anxious because I'm getting frustrated because it's not happening fast enough, quick enough, etc.
Yeah.
So just half of the battle is just becoming aware of the emotions around it. Yeah. And then once you're aware of them, then you can work out how to disempower all of that anxiety and the feelings around it, just by being aware of it.
Because I think a lot of people, and you said this earlier and it really like rang true, that a lot of people are terrified of losing what they've made because they've worked so hard to make it, and it's debilitating to think that you could potentially lose what you've busted your freckle on, you know.
Yeah, especially looking in the current environment at the moment, you know, we're staring down the barrel of another global financial issue, which I'll allude to briefly. But, you know, for someone that's nearing retirement or potentially thinking they're 5 to 10 years away of, you know, the thought that they've worked really hard to build all these assets, and then what? They're worried where to invest. You know, do I buy another investment property or a investment property? What's going to happen to my super funds? You know, do I even put money into super? You know, where? How on earth am I supposed to be creating wealth? And I think in the last 10 or 15 years particularly, it's incredibly difficult for people to find solid, reliable information on what is the best way to build wealth going forward. You know, years ago we used to be in an environment where property was doing well. So people would buy property, unlock equity, get another property, equity, get another property, you know, and then amass these fortunes, or they'd become really good at renovating. So they'd buy one, reno it, make a snappy 70 or 100 grand, and then turn it over and buy another one. Those sorts of opportunities don't really exist anymore. And then with the markets the way they are, you know, people in the age of technology where the information is so readily available and we get these instant contagion effects across the world, people are then terrified that, look, I'm going to put 100 grand, it's all my super, into the markets, and then what? But then worst case scenario, that's the fear side of things, you know, and they don't want to be too greedy. They're not looking for major returns. They're just looking for half-decent returns.
Mm.
But then, and the fear side says, well, what if? And so then they put it into cash or fixed interest, which is barely even outperforming inflation. You know, they get no returns on that money at all. And then sometimes, you know, you get those that go, well, you know what, I need to make something out of this. And then the greed side of it goes, well, what could we be doing? And so, you know, markets are made from people who are looking at getting bigger returns than what the average market's giving, and so they get into all sorts of harebrained schemes and ideas. So, yeah, but in my opinion, most of it comes down to fear versus greed. And then from there, once you allocate or you decide where are you coming from, why is that, where are your concerns, then pull all that apart and start educating yourself on, okay, well, I'm thinking this way because of this, but what in actual fact is the reality? You know, where are we in the world right now? How do I feel about that? What is actually happening in that environment, or is my mind making it bigger than it is?
Well, I think a lot of people wouldn't even know how to answer that question. You know, like what is happening in the world right now, and is my mind making it bigger than it is? I mean, when we listen to the news, or when we listen to, when we look at social media, you know, we've only got to, we don't have to look real far to find enough ammunition to fuel the fire of fear.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And and for somebody who is not well-versed from a financial point of view, they're really just listening to a lot of stuff that inflames the situation.
Yeah, but you know what? Even when you are well-versed, like myself,
yeah,
you still follow different trains of thought. So, for instance, you know, some of the world's best economic professors, you know, who I follow, and I'll see what they're saying. You know, 80% of the time, especially the ones I respect, 80% of the time what they're saying, you know, really resonates, and gosh, you think, you know, that's absolutely brilliant. But then they'll say something that I'll go, oh, seriously, where did you pull that one from?
Oh, really?
And then, yeah. So it doesn't matter. And then people will listen to what I say and go, you know, what rot is she speaking? And on the TV in the morning, you know, for the most part, you know, they've got an obligation to the general public not to scare them.
Yeah.
You know, they've got this, they're in bed with the government pretty much to make sure that we keep high consumer sentiment wherever we can. So from that, they get guarded about their reporting so that they don't create this fear or scaremongering in the finance world because of the lack of education, because for the general public I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to go out there and say the sky's falling in, people will run around like Henny Penny looking for cover. So, and then that causes all sorts of drama in the fickle finance world.
Mm.
So to get out there and go, no, we've got blue skies today, everyone goes, okay, great, thanks. And that's as far as they delve into it. So it's not the average mum and dad's shortcomings. They're not aware of these things, you know, for the most part, unless you're in the finance world. It's kind of hard to decipher where you're at or who to trust with the information that you're getting. So, yeah, and even in all the research I do, you know, I can – and yeah, it's such the way with algorithms and data sets that you can manipulate the data to prove whatever argument you want to prove, really.
And isn't that the truth? You know, like I had this conversation on Up for a Chat the other day with Kim and Cindy. And Cindy was saying that, you know, she was researching one particular fellow on vaccinations, and he was saying one thing and then somebody else said something else. And she said she felt that she was sort of wondering if there's all this information that supports his view and all this information that supports somebody else's view, then how is a person supposed to know? And I think, you know, it's absolutely right. Like I can jump online, and I'm just relating this to food, but I can jump online and find so much information and research that supports being a vegan, even raw vegan, versus being a meat eater. And I can find so much research and so much data on the health of humanity and our digestive tract and, it, you know, the shape of our mouths and our teeth and how we were never designed to eat meat, blah, 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 blah. Yet Cindy will jump online and she'll do research and she'll find more than she could ever read that supports eating meat and just about anything else. So...
Yeah, same in the financial world.
Well, yeah, it's exactly this is the same.
Yeah, yep. And it makes it very, very difficult. The only thing with the financial world is that we've been brought up on this, they call it neoclassical economics, which is old school, and basically they say that the markets are perfect and everybody acts rationally.
Oh.
But and that's what you get taught. But in actual fact, that's not the case at all, and everything's irrational. And things change over time. So I think when it comes to studies of any description, whether it's food or finance, you're supposed to be able to look for peer-reviewed, you know, what do they call them, double placebo something,
double-blind.
Double-blind placebo trials, all this stuff. And if you get, you know, a group of 50,000 versus 50, you know, your data is going to come out much more thorough. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's easy to say, you know, we've got this study that supports this and we've got the study that supports that. And these studies are the same ones that happen in finance. You know, they'll get three professors in a room and all of them will think of a certain, well, they'll be along the same lines of things, and they'll all decide and they'll deduce and they'll come down to they've set these particular algorithms and this is what's going to happen with the markets going forward. And then the people that follow them think like that. And then the people who don't beat them up for thinking like that. And it becomes this, you know, same contentious issue. I like the idea of, which is why I'm at arm's length now and I'm not affiliated with any of the big conglomerates myself.
Yeah.
I like the idea of researching and learning as much as I possibly can and then making my own decisions on something. So,
yeah.
And that's what I encourage my clients to do regardless. So it doesn't matter what I think. Let's find out as much as we can about the topics at hand and then you go with how you feel about it, because what I might think and believe is good for my body, for instance, might be completely different to the next person. Mm. And the same goes with finances. So the one thing I will say when it comes to money is that I'm a big believer in having assets in all the different investment quadrants, you know, like shares, property and cash fixed interest types or business. Nice. Because I think to naively say I'm just in shares or I'm just in property means that you're missing out on potential gains in the other asset classes. So becoming aware and being smarter, it's probably no different to someone who wants to eat vegan raw, but you're aware of all the benefits of a paleo lifestyle, for instance. So yeah, it's just trying to educate yourself on whatever it is that you're trying to do.
So how do you think a person's relationship to money influences their ability to think and act clearly when it comes to money? Like,
yeah, that's a good question. It's well, you only need to sit there if you're listening and think about how you feel about your own situation. So, for instance, if you knew I was going to come over to your house this afternoon and I was going to ask you, show me your bank statements, show me your budget. I hate budgets, by the way, but tell me how you can account for money in and money out. You know, what assets do you have? What liabilities do you have? Do you have a rough snapshot? If you're feeling sick in the guts, thinking, oh, God, I don't even know where that is, or it's a pile of stuff over here. I don't have any filing cabinets. Hang on, let me log into the internet. I can't remember. You know, if it's all of that for you, or if you think, I'll show all of this except my credit card, or I'll show her all of this except for my superannuations because I know I've got five of them, but I've got no idea where my statements are. You know, that sort of stuff around money can cause anxiety.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to debt, even personal debt or business debt, doesn't matter, it's still related to debt. Mm. People, it keeps them awake at night. And then lack of sleep, you know, all the physiological side of things that go with that. But, money, they say money's the root of all evil. I don't necessarily agree with that. I happen to think it's pretty awesome. But I think I think there's some small things that people can do to make their relationship with money a whole lot healthier. And the first thing would be to just get a snapshot of where you're at today. And it doesn't need to be 10 hours in your office trying to work out, you know, how things are moving for you. It just needs to be, what is the money coming in and what's the money going out? And if you've got problems in relation to financial bleeds, you know, like you need to stem the bleeding of the money out. And that could just be as simple as, I've got too many direct debits of stuff I don't use, or, you know, magazine subscriptions and subscriptions to all sorts of things, programs you don't use, that sort of thing. Or it could be, you're spending too much at BWS.
Oh, hello.
or it could be anything, you know. People have their vices in all sorts of areas. Or it could just be as simple as you're shopping too many times during the week because you're not planning ahead, or you're having to buy too many takeaway foods and cafes and, you know, those sorts of little things. And if you're strapped for cash, they're the sorts of things that you really need to concentrate on. So getting an idea of money in versus money out, and then having a snapshot, which I always like to do, and on my website I've got free tools that people can use, like budget planners and asset and liability calculators and that sort of things if they want them. But getting a snapshot of what it is that you own versus what it is that you owe. So, for instance, you know, you might have a house that's worth $500,000 and you owe $350 on it. So having a spreadsheet or a piece of paper where you've got all that written down, then you get a lot of clarity around your financial affairs, whereas a lot of people just tend to carry it around in their heads and then they mull stuff over and then they get anxious about different things, and it's because they generally haven't put pen to paper and sat down and gone, okay, well, that's what we're looking at over there, and or they've got no idea. They just put their head in the sand and hope money's there when they need it and hope there's enough available credit room on their credit cards if they need to buy something.
Yeah, I'd be scared.
Mm. And yet that's the general population in my experience.
Yeah, and I think you've encapsulated it. I don't know that there would be many people that haven't or don't experience money the same way. I'm interested, and I know that we're coming to the end of the show, but I'm really interested to try to understand from your point of view, somebody who loves it and somebody who I see is so unattached to it. Like, you're so unemotionally involved with it, which gives you incredible clarity.
Yeah.
How does a person move from that emotional attachment to getting that perspective that gives them the clarity so that they can make smarter decisions?
Well, that's absolutely gold, because that's what it all hedges on. So anybody that has fear versus greed, anybody that feels sick in the guts and keeps them awake at night around money is emotionally attached regardless. So despite what they might tell you, if they're fearful about the superannuation, they're fearful about what's happening with the markets, that's emotional attachment to it, or they've got emotion around that. Two things will be either because they are lacking in education and action around their finances. So, for instance, they don't have an action plan in place that if this happens, we're going to do this, if this happens, we're going to do that. Or they don't have an action plan in place to pay down their credit card debt. Or they don't have an action plan in place to maximize their money in versus money out. So, and that can be as simple as a 1 hour chat with someone who knows what they're on about to help you cement that. So, and that's the action side of it. The emotion side of it will come to the mindset, which is in most instances needs a lot of work for a lot of people. Mindset then comes to education. Why do we think that way? How do we feel that way? I mean, that's all your baby. That's all stuff you're good at. In my experience, one of the greatest things that you can do is to get a snapshot of your current situation, put an action plan into place. If this is going to happen, this is what we're going to do. And then that allows you to free up a lot of the angst and the troubling emotions that come with the finance side of things. And then once you start to remove yourself from it, so you know that it just sits over there as this cog, this wheel, this entity of your life that's working towards certain goals for you, you take away the importance that it gives. So probably the emotional attachment that comes with money is what makes people sick, is what causes marital breakdown and all that sort of stuff. If you can look at it as just a pure commodity, no different to having
Well, it sounded like a grocery list as you were talking about it then. If this happens, I'm going to do that. If this happens, I'm going to do that. So if I feel like broccoli, I'll have broccoli. If I feel like steak, I'll have steak. If I feel like chicken, well, this is what we'll make. You know, it felt like you very much made it more practical and pragmatic rather than
Yeah, and I guess that's the way I look at it. You know, if I get home for dinner and we only have chicken in the freezer, that's what we're having for dinner. I take the emotion out of it. I don't give it the credence. I don't add to the anxiety. And when it comes to the financial matters, you only need to see some of the biggest people who are very successful, like the Buffetts of the world. You know, they take a set of financials or a current situation, they analyze it, they do the due diligence on it, they make a decision, and then they leave it. There's no going back over, revisiting, agonizing. I'm a great advocate of we'll make a decision today that we've given really good credence to, that we've done all the financials on, and this time next year we'll review it. And if it's working, we'll keep it, and if it's not, we'll ditch it. And it's just that simple. And so there's no emotional decisions to make. Either the figures stack up or they don't. And when it comes to people's financial affairs, It's exactly the same. If you can't afford it, you don't have it. Or if the figures don't stack up, you don't do it. So you might be madly in love with that house that you want to buy and you've saved your deposits. If the figures don't stack up, you just don't do it. And that's where you start to remove a lot of the emotion from it, because everything comes down to financial due diligence. It either works or it won't.
Mm.
And then the people that are prepared to take the risk, you need to put a risk premium on that. So if it doesn't work, what's the risk?
And how much are you prepared to lose?
That's right. What's the greatest thing we could lose in this instance? Yes, I'm prepared to take that risk because the reward is so much greater. So, yes, I want that property and I'm prepared that I'm not going to get any gain out of it and it's not a tax-deductible investment. But, my gosh, the reward of having my own home and being able to paint the walls and come home and call it mine, that reward for me makes my heart sing and far outweighs, you know what, that there is a financial decision. And then that removes the emotion from it because you go, okay, well, we've done it. We've done the risk versus reward. You do the same thing in business. And sometimes a third person can be that objective analyst that you need, you know, especially with couples. Because you get so heated because it's so emotional around the money side of it. I'm right. No, I'm right. So it's just trying to step back and going, okay, well, this is the outcomes, and if this happens, then we'll look at this, and if that happens, we'll look at that. Can I live with it if it goes pear-shaped? Yes, I can. Can I live with it if it goes pear-shaped? No, I can't. So then what do we put into play from there? And if you can always sort of step back and go, gosh, I'm being far too emotional around this, what would Jody say? Well, step back.
I think that makes a massive difference because you kind of get out of the skin you're in and you associate into somebody else who's completely detached, and they're going to have a very, you know, like if you say, what would Jody say, then all of a sudden it's a very different decision.
Yeah, absolutely. A friend of mine was trying to make a decision on whether to buy a property or not and had a massive accounting issue. And so I was able to say, well, you know what, if you did it this way, you can still get the property and you minimize your tax and it's win-win. But there was so much emotional stuff around it that you weren't seeing the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
But then when you removed all of that, it just became a lay-down decision. You know, it's quite simple. But sometimes you need someone to come in with fresh eyes and help with that sort of thing too. You know, it can be just a little bit too close to home for a lot of people, especially if they're not used to managing their affairs that way.
Oh, and yeah. I think one of the things that they really needed just to teach in schools is, you know, financial literacy, at least to some degree, so that people can manage and track their money, their ins and outs. You know, I think that for a lot of people, they don't even know to look at it.
One of the biggest things that I see when I'm coaching is people say we're going nowhere. You know, 10 years we've been here, we're in the same job, it's all very ho-hum. You know, surely there's got to be more to life than this. Or how do we save our 20-cent pieces to get to the next level? So the first thing I do is go in and let's take a snapshot, and then we start measuring where they've been and where they are now. Yeah. And that in itself blows their minds because their properties have increased, their supers have increased, their personal debt levels decreased, and it might only be minuscule through the year, but you add that up over 5 years, they're moving forward. And just that headspace, just that positive, oh, my goodness, is astronomical. And then that's when we can start to say, okay, well, what do you want to do over the next 5 years? And let's put a plan into play. And then each 3 to 6 months, we just do the figures. And then they can see that they are moving towards that. Mm. And then that takes all the emotion of we're getting nowhere, you know, we're going to retire poor.
That removes
all of that because they've got this beautiful positive association with their financial situation. And then ironically, when you stop stressing about it and you stop feeling sick in the guts about it, and for those of you that believe in the law of attraction and whatever, it does come. Different possibilities open up. I've seen it too many times to doubt it for myself. So the more you're fearful and you're hanging on to something, whether it's the fear of losing it or the fear of not making it, chances are you're just going to keep attracting more of the same. Whereas if you can get a situation into play, you can plan for what it is that you're going to do and you go, that's it, it is what it is, I can't really change it at the moment, I'm going to keep moving forward in this direction. And then because you've taken all that negative hoo-ha off it, it's amazing then what life brings to you. Mm. So
I think that sounds amazing. You've done an amazing job today. I think you have. You really have. You've really kind of, you've dissected it in a way that we haven't just sat talking about the financial markets. What we've spoken about is what actually, it's kind of like give a first person a fish and they'll starve for the rest, they'll starve tomorrow, but teach them how to fish and they'll feed themselves the rest of their lives. And I think what you've done today is you've opened up a door for people to cool their jets when it comes to money, so that then it doesn't matter whether the rains come or the winds come, their house when it comes to money is relatively stable because they're not buying into the emotional turmoil of it. They're just able to make decisions that are right for themselves, when I think a lot of people don't know what's right for them because they've never been educated on it. But I think, but what you've done today is opened that up to, you know, have people start to know, okay, well, there isn't only one rule and there isn't only one way. There are multiple ways. So let's start looking at the multiple ways.
True, true. And, you know, whatever happens, people get scared and they get concerned. And the best thing is that when markets fall, whether they're property or their shares or it does, even business, you know, when your back is against a wall, that's when the most amazing things happen. So they say more millionaires are made in downturns.
Yeah.
Because they make some supreme decisions and they take advantages of different situations. So work out where you are in your world in relation to money. Just appreciate it is what it is. It's a commodity. And you don't need to attach an emotion to it because it just is what it is.
Yeah.
And then if things do go pear-shaped, whether it's the markets or it's your small business or, yes, you're going to take lessons from it. That's a nice way of looking at it. It doesn't really help unless, you know. But where can you take advantage? What can you take advantage of? So a classic example is if someone's in an environment where their back's against a wall in small business, you know, they're robbing Peter to pay Paul and they're scared and they're uncertain and they're listening to this and they're saying, it's easy for you, it sounds all very good. If you get a snapshot of where you are, you remove the emotion from it, sit it over there and then look at it with new eyes, fresh eyes, what could you do differently? And that's when the gold comes. That's when the marketing genius comes. That's when the, oh my goodness, we need to get into this different market, or we need to dump that market because it's not, you know, that those products because it's not profitable, all sorts of things. When you clear the emotion from it, really smart decisions happen. It's the same with the financial markets. When they plummet and you start investing, you know, you're buying when the market's on sale. That's when the gold stuff happens. That's when the magic happens. So for anyone that thinks that their back's against the wall, take a snapshot of where they're at, try and remove the emotion from it, and then sit back quietly and say, what am I missing?
Oh, I love it. That's amazing. My love, thank you. Thank you for being so thanks for being so into it. Because on behalf of us,
it's sad.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, you're sweet.
Thank you. So how can people get to work with you? Because I know that some of our guests are definitely going to be thinking, I just need to have a bigger conversation with her.
Yeah,
so absolutely. How can they do that?
Okay, well, my coaching gets pretty full and I only take limited clients at any given time just so that I can maximize bang for buck for people and I'm not overstretched with my time.
Yeah.
But they can contact me at info@jodynolan.com, JodyNolan.com, or touch base with me on social media, Instagram, Twitter and Facebook, which is just all Jody Nolan.
Fantastic.
And then I'll get back to you on those inquiries. But you know, for those of you that are looking for the first place to start, there's a 12-step program on there, which just goes through what I would typically do in a decluttering mindset snapshot analysis for people. That's a download thing on my website, and my book, which is a bestseller, Surviving the Storm, and Read My Lips, which I wrote with Cindy and Kim years ago.
Oh,
so that's
brilliant.
All on the website.
Yeah. Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you, my love. That's fabulous. You've been bloody amazing as always. I'm so glad I got you on the show because there's so much going on financially right now and I can just see people. And, I mean, it happens even in my house, you know, listening to the news going, now what, you know, and then you start anticipating what's going to happen in the business and all that sort of jazz, you know, and it just gets out of hand.
Yeah.
So thank you. You've been amazing.
No worries. We'll talk soon.
You're damn right we will. For everybody that's been listening to today's show, I hope you've loved our Jodie as much as we love her. So make sure that you check out her website at allthews.jodienolan.com. And go to my Facebook page at allthews.facebook.com/Karen Smith. Or you can go to allthews.karenscouch.com and you can post your comments and your questions there. And I love, love, love hearing from you. I've had some amazing messages from you guys on Facebook lately. So keep them coming. It's just fantastic. Also, make sure that you give us a 5-star rating when you're on iTunes and tell everybody that you know about Karen's couch because it rocks. We're going to see you here same time, same station next week. Thanks so much for joining us on the ride, everybody. You're awesome. See you.
This has been a production of TheWellnessCouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on Facebook.com/TheWellnessCouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.